So it is a different Friday interview today. It's an interview that I did with Gerry Anderson in 2011. Gerry had popped into the studio just before Christmas of that year, and he was only expected to be here for a few minutes. He was messing around, as usual, getting stuck into me, bantering me, annihilating me, as usual. And we kind of then stumbled into a long interview about his life and the ups and downs of his career. So I would like you to have a listen to this today. I guess we'll begin at the beginning, when I asked him how he first got his break in radio.
I was drunk one day and I fell asleep outside Radio 4, and they brought
now
me
I'm being serious. All tell right, me serious.
Well, I was a musician for years and years and years, and then I stopped that. I was an American. I said, I'll get fed up. I was about 32, 31, whatever it was. And you know, you reach that stage where the music that you like, it goes out of fashion, and you can see the future in front of you. You're playing weddings, stuff like that. But I was playing a great rock band. So I said, that'll do me. I'll stop now. So I stopped. I came home and I went to university because I always thought I missed something by not going to university. And then I went to
university. What did
you study? I studied sociology and social anthropology.
Did you enjoy it?
No. There's other people go. Other people go to university to try and get job qualifications. I went there because I wanted to read. So I went there and I wanted to pick something that wasn't hard so that I wouldn't have to work at it. So I just sat in the library for 5 years and read books. It was wonderful. I discovered that most of the stupidest people in the world are at university. Once you realise that, you don't worry about it. It's out of your system. And then I came out of there and I got the job as an editor of a local magazine called the Community Mirror. So the first day I was in that, I got a phone call from Radio Foyle and he said, do you want to come down and do an interview? I said, what, about what? He says, you're the new editor of this magazine? I said, yeah. I said, I don't know anything about it. I just walked in the door. I talked my way into it. I've never had anything to do with a magazine in my life. I said, come down there. I said, but don't be asking me any questions, like circulation, but reach, about policy, editorial. Like, don't be asked because I don't know. So they threw me in live and they asked me all those questions. So if you're in a situation like that, you have to say to yourself, no, will I just sit here and say nothing or what'll I do? So I just told them a bunch of lies.
I wonder, could
you fed up now?
No doubt the crack team. No,
he's had enough of that now.
No, I'm not.
I was only in the middle of it.
He's not even looking at you.
Hold on a second. I'm really interested. Really, really interested.
You believe him?
We have binned Roy Walker for you, so you better be good. I wonder, can we find Anderson's first broadcast? Could somebody in Derry do that for us? I'd love to hear his first broadcast ever on Radio 4.
That'd be very difficult.
Why?
Because that would have been... Well, the first thing I was ever asked to do, they said to me, right, after I did that, I came out, the producer said to me, did you make all that up? I said, yeah. I said, well, you know, what do you want to do this, say nothing? She said, you might be good at this. And he said, so in other words, they discovered that the ability to lie live on air was regarded as being positive. So I said to myself, I think I might like this BBC.
Yeah.
And they said, do you write? I said, well, I do write. And they said, well, why don't you write something and maybe record it and do something else? So I wrote this this kind of journey. It was called Fear and Loathing in the Search of the Perfectly Symmetrical BAP. You see, about this holy grail. It was like, no, in Derry, people eat BAPs all the time, exist on them. So it's a perfectly round BAP. But they're all different shapes. And I said, the perfectly round one. And it had been found, and it was an icon. And you had to search through the city for it, you see. So you went through the underbelly of Derry and met all these different people. So I had this journey looking for the perfectly symmetrical BAP. And that was it. That's how I started. And then somebody got sick or something. And they said to me, will you do an hour of radio? And I said, well, what do you mean? They said, you know, play music and talk. I said, what? What do you mean talk? I said, talk. See, I never listened to radio, so I didn't know what to do. I said, well, I know the music because I was a musician. I said, music's all right. So I started to talk about the stuffed alligator at the top of me granny stairs, you know, and why people walk with their arms folded, you know.
And did you feel comfortable from day one?
Yeah, because I had no idea what I was doing, but I just talked about the first thing that came off the top of my head because I had no idea, I had no yardstick. I hadn't listened to the radio. I didn't listen to, like, Tony Blackburn and whoever was on at the time, Steve Wright. I had no idea. I never listened to them. That's hard. That's the hard thing, is to get in the door.
That's right.
But, you see, I never knew that because I was asked to go in the door.
So then you're part of the BBC and you've got your own show.
I'm the same person as I was then. I have not worked at anything. I do exactly the same thing now as I did then.
I don't believe you.
That's the thing that I do. I do exactly the same thing as I do now. I write more, but that's a different thing. But the very first day I walked in, I'm exactly the same now as I was that day.
So, you get your own gig, mm-hmm. Then you get comfortable.
Yeah.
And then the big call comes from Radio 4.
That's right. But I never asked for that.
What did you first think when you heard Radio 4 wants me?
No, it was a different thing entirely. What happened was I was doing stuff for Radio 2.
Yeah.
You see? And I was doing an afternoon thing and that kind of thing.
Radio 2, a bigger, more important station than Radio 4 back then, wasn't it?
I was on yeah, it was. I was on Radio 2 on Saturday afternoon, like 3 months a year. And I did that for about 6 months. And everything was going well. And then the head of Radio 2 asked to see me. And I went down to London and then I fell out with her. Because she had this whole different idea of what should be done. She said at that time... Oh,
so the driven, ambitious guy is so driven and so ambitious that he falls out with people to get what he wants.
No, no, she said to me. She said to me about the station was changing and we didn't want people who talk. You know, it's all music now. I said, no, it's not. It's not all music. I said, people will always go to Radio 2, BBC, for the talk, because anybody can play music. But it's only very few people can talk in an interesting way. So we kind of fell out then. But it wasn't me plugging for a job. As a matter of fact, I talked my way out of one, because she was going to give me a job for a guy just sitting playing music, but she didn't want me to talk like the way I normally did. I said, no, I couldn't be bothered with that. And then we fell out. And then I was doing stuff on Radio 4 at the time, and one of the guys there said to me, he said, listen, they've got this new show they're going to do. Why don't you do an audition for it? I said, so why would I do that? He said, you never know, you might get it. I said, all right, I'll do it. So I did it, and I couldn't believe it. Everybody in the whole world was in for it. And I just did it to get a weekend in London. That's all I did for.
How old were you then?
Younger than I am.
In your 40s, 50s,
30s? Yes, I was. I was 46.
Right.
So I went over there.
Now, 46 is old if you're taking a big risk of leaving your comfort zone back home.
Absolutely.
Going across the water.
Absolutely.
Because by that stage, you want a wee bit of comfort, you want a wee bit of money, and you're risking the security of Northern Ireland.
That's
to
right.
go over there.
Yeah.
Why? If you're not driven and you're not ambitious.
Because I was asked. And
clear off, Jerry. It's deeper than that. You know, you were asked.
They
come
said
on.
They said
it's
to
a
me,
huge
no.
decision.
They said to me, okay, so we're going to give you this gig and we want you to do what you do.
Yeah.
But see, what I didn't know then was that I would never get away with it. I didn't know that. But see, they told me that I would. But they told me it was a risk. So I said, yeah, why not? So I did it.
And what slot were you in?
3 to 4 on Monday to Friday, Radio 4.
And how quickly did you realise that they didn't like you?
About a month.
What happened?
They started to complain. No, they complained better than the newspapers. They started to go for me, the Daily Telegraph, Daily Mail, The Guardian.
How did they go? In what way did they go for you?
Well, there was a bit of this and a bit of that. They didn't like my accent and they thought I was superficial and they thought I was not intellectual enough. But what I said was, you know, well, I'm trying to be approachable. You know, I don't mean to be. I can be intellectual if I want to be because I'm not stupid. But I'm not. I've never been intellectual on the radio. I mean, who am I? William Crawley? You know, I mean, I could be William Crawley if I wanted to be, but I don't want to be, and neither do you. does Vinny, and neither does anybody.
Crawley needs to come up to the studio and defend himself, doesn't he? So, did anybody put you under pressure to change your accent?
Yes, that happened a while after.
What did they say to you?
No, they didn't. No, they just said they want you to. We need to be different. And I said, I can't be different. And that was it. So he just wrote it out.
When you say you wrote it out, there must have been times, because I know what it's like across the water, you're away from home, must have been times where you get pretty low, where you think, I want to be wanted here. I want to be liked.
No, I had a point. There was a point I reached whereby it was just the broadsheets were going for me. I said, if this goes to tabloid, I'm out of here. Because once it gets the tabloids, your life becomes a misery. Because nobody cares about what people write in the broadsheets.
Well, there were stories about you in the broadsheets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, nothing personal. But, you know, attacks, you know, kind of thing.
And what did that do to you in your head? Seriously?
Well, a lack of confidence. Lack of confidence. It eroded your confidence. But I was all right after
that. So it's not incredible that you can be right up there, incredibly confident about what you're doing here.
Yeah.
You go over there, you're still the same person, you've still got that ability that you have.
They didn't accept it because it wasn't what they were used to.
Yeah.
They didn't want my type of attitude. They thought I was flippant and irreverent and non-intellectual. But I said, well, I'm Irish.
And how did it manifest itself with you when you lost your confidence?
Oh, well...
Do you go quiet? Share with other people? What do you do?
No, I didn't lose my confidence then.
Okay.
Whenever it was over, we came to a kind of a mutual agreement.
Did the tabloids turn on you?
Oh, no, never.
Okay. So what was the defining moment for you to say, I'm gone?
Oh, no, no. We discussed it with Michael Green, who's the head of Radio 4 at the time. And we discussed this because I wanted to go about 6 months into it. And he said, no, he said, write it out. It'll be okay. Write it out. It'll be all right. So we wrote it out. He said, but you're going to have to change. I said, no, I can't change. But I'll write it out. But, you know, if you don't like me, they don't like me. That's it. You know, who am I? Eamon Holmes? You see? So I wrote it out. And then at the end, he said, this isn't going to work. I said, well, I told you that 6 months ago. And he said, what do you think? I said, I don't mind going. He said, okay. That's the way, genuinely, that's the way it went. People say mutual agreement and they don't mean that. But it was a genuinely mutual agreement. Very nice man, by the way, Michael Green.
And so did you come back with Northern Ireland at that point with a lack of confidence?
That's when it happened. When I came back, people would say things to you, you know, stuff like that. You know.
Like what?
Well, you're perceived as a failure, you know.
How does that feel?
That was the worst thing. I was all right when I left. When I came back, that was the worst. That was the worst, yeah. Because you were perceived to be coming back with your tail between your legs, which I didn't feel. I didn't feel that way, but people thought that's what they thought.
So then you're a 47-year-old.
48 then.
48-year-old. Yeah. Unemployed broadcaster.
Yeah. But Radio Ulster.
Scary.
Radio Ulster asked me, they said, would you want to come back and do your show? I said, lovely, thank you.
And were you immediately accepted here? Bang. No, was that it?
Yes, but in myself, I couldn't talk for about a year.
Honestly?
Ah, yeah. I could. I had no confidence. I used to write little things. I used to write scripts and things. Because I had no confidence.
So the man that doesn't prepare at all was having to force himself to.
Yeah, because wow. I got to the stage whereby I couldn't trust myself when I opened my mouth because I wasn't sure what was going to come out. Whereas before I didn't care.
What did you learn from that whole experience?
Never do anything unless you check it out fully. You see, if I had checked it out fully, I would realise that I was in a hiding nothing. But it was a great experience. I wouldn't do it again, but it didn't do me any harm in the long run. It made me a stronger person.
Mm. So if there's a broadcaster here in Northern Ireland and they're doing well, or take, you know, Vinny in the future, whatever, myself, yeah, whatever, you. Whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a risk worth taking?
Not Radio 4, no. No, not Radio 4. Radio 4 specifically, it's not like anywhere else. It's the best radio station in the world. Radio 4 people are unforgiving. You see, the Radio 4 audience generally, and it's wrong to generalise, but, you know, they feel as if the state has let them down. They feel as if the church has let them down. Radio 4 is the only thing left, you see. But if anybody tries to change that in any way or tries to interfere with that, they react violently. Violently, really. But, I mean, that's the way it is, you know. But I should have known that. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not complaining about that because I'm not complaining about people hanging on to something that they cherish. But if I had known that, I wouldn't have went near it.
And if Radio Ulster hadn't been around, so if you had have come back and the BBC didn't want you, what do you think you'd be doing now?
Playing weddings. Sweet Caroline.
You see, once you've had a scare like that in life,
yeah.
And then you come back and you're successful again. Yeah. Does it change priorities or how grateful for things? Or
no, I just felt lucky. I felt lucky I was able to get back on the ladder. I just felt lucky and I'm enjoying it and I continue to enjoy it. I love it. And that's why I love giving you a hard time. Because but you'd be okay. If you decided to go to Radio 4, you'd be fine in Radio 5 because Radio 5 is not as unforgiving.
I mean, I would be fine. I am all right in Radio 5.
But if you decided
He's talking for this if I'm not there.
I know, but you aren't there. But you see, if somebody said to you, listen, we want you to go over there and do every afternoon, you'd hesitate to do that.
I would.
You would, but I would say go ahead. But
would you hesitate to do that?
Would I hesitate to do that?
Or is that something on your mind?
He likes it here.
Of course I'd hesitate to do that because I absolutely love what I do in Northern Ireland.
And
the people of Northern Ireland kind of, you know.
Yeah.
They shout at me, but they accept me for who I am.
But would your aim be to have a daytime show?
I don't know.
Afternoon, maybe something like that.
I'm doing what I do now here. I get the best of both worlds. I do here and I do across the water.
All I'm saying is, if somebody asked you to do that and you wanted to do it, you should not hesitate to do it because you would be okay. Because Radio 5 is all right. It's a broader church.
See, I never get a chance to talk to you seriously on the radio because you're always having to go at me. So, what do you want to do in your life now for the rest of your life? Seriously, have you any big goals still?
I would like to make a. I'd like somebody to come up to me and give me a whole load of money, and say, "Here, listen."
Be serious now.
Well, I'm being serious.
I think maybe
I'm being serious.
What would you like to do?
No, the only thing that I'm interested in is writing. I'm really interested in that. I'm working on another book now, and I'm spending a lot of time on
book
that.
Book about what?
Well, it's about. I've written two books, and the last one ended off when I was in America in a rock and roll band. You see, and. This one is kind of... I'm not quite sure where it's going. It's going all different directions. I haven't pulled it together yet. But I'm spending a lot of time on it.
You don't strike me as the type of person who could be focused and disciplined enough to put a book together?
Oh, no, only if I, no, I can only be focused and disciplined if I'm interested in something. Right. That was one of the reasons why I didn't work in Radio 4, because if I was talking to somebody in Radio 4 that I wasn't interested in, it was so obvious, and I would say it, and people couldn't handle it. I mean, I talked to so many boring people, and I would just get fed, I'd switch off, you know. And people couldn't understand why I couldn't talk to boring people, because they were boring people too. I just can't. I cannot do anything if I'm not interested in it. I am really passionately interested in this, in talking and being on the radio. And I'm also passionately interested in writing. And I can do that. I can discipline myself. I can write 4 or 5 hours every day. No problem. I am disciplined if I want to be.
And as you get older, do you feel that you've got to put something back in? Do you start?
No.
Honestly. Honestly.
What Hugo said the other day.
Because we were talking about homeless people there earlier on the programme.
Oh, you mean
all that type
of
stuff.
No.
You know, that type of social stuff where you concentrate in your younger life on yourself. Well, certainly I did. You're thinking, right, what can I do? What can I achieve? Where can I get to next? And as you get a wee bit older, you start thinking, oh.
No, I don't think like that. I'll tell you why I don't think like that. I think the most important thing is to be kind to people. You're an exception. To be kind to people. And if you do that all your life, I don't think you have to put anything back, because you do it continually. I think I like to think that I'm kind to people.
You consider yourself to be kind?
To people, yeah. People. On the radio is not real life.
Yeah. Radio's so in what way? In what way are you
just
kind to people?
I treat people with decency, and I like people, and, you know, I try and be kind to them, yeah.
Are you a forgiving type of individual, or if someone crosses you, do you hold a grudge? You see, I hold a grudge. No, I do. You see, once someone crosses me, honestly, if they do me a disservice, if they lie to me, that's it. I switch off, and it's a really bad trait. And Vinny, you know this.
Definitely, 100%.
I switch off, and that's it for life. I can't switch back onto them again. What are you like?
I'm like that if I think it's unjust. If somebody crosses you and it's really unjust, I do things that maybe perhaps people talk about and I get annoyed, but I know they're right. If I think they're even partly right, I can forgive them. But if I think they're entirely wrong and it's unfair, I find it hard to forgive you. I find it hard to forgive you for many things that you've done.
What do you really think of the Northern Ireland audience and the Northern Ireland people?
Well, Hugo has it all sorted. You see, you and I think the Northern Ireland audience is like Belfast, but it's not. It's Bisharkin, it's Gorchin, it's, you know, Hugo has it all sorted. Hugo has his finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
What about you? How are you doing? Say everything twice. Hello, hello. How are you doing? Who's that wee fella beside you?
I think for about the next, we've 3 minutes left of this interview, Mr. Anderson.
Do you want me to sing a song?
I think for one of the 3 minutes, we'll give young Vincent a chance to ask you a question.
Okay, Vincent.
You put me in the spot now.
Yeah.
What would you?
You want to improve your broadcasting career, don't you?
The question that's been in my mind sitting here, and is a very selfish question, is what advice you would give somebody like me?
Be yourself. Especially on the radio, be yourself. If they don't like you, do something else. Because the alternative is to become somebody else that people like. Now, that's what everybody else does. I'm not saying Stephen does it, because I don't think he does. But a lot of people develop this persona that they think is a popular radio persona. And it does work. I mean, I could name you people now, but I wouldn't do it.
Don't.
No, I wouldn't. No, I'm not that stupid. No, I know people who are totally false, who are on the radio, and people think they're lovely, but they're not lovely at all. They've created this thing. And I don't know what goes on in their minds. Because they have to act for the entire life. They have to be this thing that they think is popular for their entire lives, whereas I don't even have to worry about it, and neither does he. We just be ourselves. And if you go on the radio and you be yourself and people don't like it, you know, get another job.
What do you really, honestly, truly think of Stephen?
I like him.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Because it does
amazing?
Come across slightly different sometimes.
Well, that's only a bit of crack. It's the old Irish banter thing, isn't it? But me and him are good. We're friends, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. You don't believe that, do you?
I'm not 100% sure. Do you see any similarities in yourself when you were that age?
Absolutely none.
Not at all.
He's a monster. An ego-driven maniac.
See, this sounds more accurate.
Yeah, that's him. But I don't think I was ever like that. But he's incredible. Horrible. Driven. Maniac. Paranoid.
Was radio? I'm just going back on something you said earlier, because this is the only chance I'm going to have to talk to you seriously. Was Radio 4 the worst moment in your life?
Not at all.
What was?
Oh no, I don't want to tell you. There were personal things that were worse than that.
Okay.
But Radio 4. I never regarded it as. I remember a fellow, a senior producer in Radio 4, meeting me in the lift one time, and that was all going on. He said, "This is a terrible thing that's happening to you." I said, "No." He says, "All those things in the paper." I says, put it this way, everybody I know doesn't read The Guardian and The Daily Telegraph.
Are you the type of person, Jerry, that you want to do what you're doing, present for the rest of your, for a long, long time to come?
Well, yeah, I can't think of anything else I'd rather. The only thing I
do you want to keep on working for a lot longer?
Oh, yeah. Well, see, we have no choice.
But have you set an end date?
Like a retirement age? Give me another year. No. I'd like to do what I'm doing now, and I'd like to write. That's all I want to do. There's nothing else I want to do. I also want to get drunk every now and again.
Here's me being serious now, right? I thought you were popping in for a couple of minutes. You thought you were popping in for a couple of minutes.
I thought I was going to sing a song.
Yeah. People often ask me what I think of you, right? And here's the score. I've got a team of 7 or 8 people around me, and they give me material, and from that material, I try to sound half decent.
Uh-huh.
You create it yourself.
Oh, there's
and that is the sign of a genius.
Oh,
and I mean it. Absolutely mean it.
So get Roy Walker now.
The only compliment I will give you and tell everybody else is you are a genius in Northern Ireland, sir.
Well, thank you.
Well, that's an interview that was conducted with Jerry in 2011. Lots of your response to that interview. We will put that on today's podcast. We will put a link to that interview on our Twitter feed at Stephen Nolan. Barry writes and says, God bless Jerry. He did a lot for local songwriters. He had me on the show, and before he introduced himself, he said, where'd you get your jacket? Then he pointed to the huge piano case and said, Nolan must keep his money in that. Great man for bringing young musicians on in Northern Ireland. Great crack, says Jerry. And another says, when I was going through the toughest of times, Jerry was a tower of strength to me in the radio. Unfortunately, he will never know how much he helped me. Don't forget some of the special programming we're doing over the next couple of weeks here on Radio Ulster and indeed BBC Northern Ireland. A couple of Jerry's shows on at 10:35 tonight on BBC One.